Hey, I got a question for you. Are you living your life the way that you know is authentic to who you are and who you want to be? We're all on a journey and we haven't arrived, but are you on track for the life that you want? Are you becoming the person that you know you are meant to be? If not, do something about that. Take a step, make a change, do something differently. If you're doing something that is not healthy, not serving you well, or not serving your family well, today's a good day to stop. And maybe it's a good day for you to start doing something that makes you healthier, that puts you on a better path. Listen, we are not guaranteed to have another day on this earth. So if you are living and breathing right now, you have a chance to do something great for yourself and for your family and for the people around you. So let today be that day. Welcome back to the Business of Living podcast. This week, we have my good friend, Rich Allen. And Rich is an awesome guy. I've gotten to know him over the past couple of years. He's super successful in business and in family too. But it wasn't always that way. This conversation is powerful. It's impactful. I teared up a little bit listening to Rich's story. It's pretty incredible. Anyway, buckle up for another great conversation. Here we go. He's the author of The Ultimate Business Tune-Up. He's a podcast host, a business coach, a speaker, just an all-around good guy. I like Rich because he's no nonsense and he's a straight shooter and he says what's on his mind. And I appreciate that. I don't like a lot of fluff, and you're a pretty straightforward guy. Rich, thanks for hanging out with us today and having a conversation.
Michael, so glad to be here, man. Honestly, I couldn't think of a better place to be right now.
I love it. Same here. Well, there's a lot to mine from your experience in business and in life in general. And I want to go back a little bit. Take us back there to the starting point. What did it look like as a young Rich Allen starting out your life, trying to figure things out? Where did you get started?
Michael, I don't know that you really want to go there, but I'll give you a bit of a picture of kind of what it was. I come from a big family. I grew up outside of Cleveland. So, you know, as a Buffalo guy, you can kind of understand kind of the territory there, but I had 11 brothers and sisters growing up, so there was a house full of us. We moved probably every 2 years, either because we outgrew the place we were at or we got booted because we hadn't paid the rent. So it was one of the two, but we seemed to be on the move all the time. My dad was the hardest working guy I'd ever known. At age 36, he basically quit his day jobs. He had two or three of them going at all times. And he started his own window washing business, decided he could do his own business, build something, leave a legacy for his 12 kids. So I lived with a large family with an entrepreneurial dad who honestly knew how to wash windows, but didn't know how to run a business.
Wow. Oh my gosh. I mean, respect to him though, 12 kids. And just trying to provide for them, he quits his job and says, I'm going all in on entrepreneurship. Even if he didn't know what he was doing, he worked his tail off to provide for his family. That's respectable.
You know, I got, like I said, he's my hero in a lot of ways. I respect my dad for everything he was. He wasn't a great businessman. He was great with customers. He never let anybody down. He wouldn't quit. My dad was an eternal optimist. I saw your post the other day about the optimist doing the cha-cha bit, going stepping backwards and forwards.
Yeah, one step forward, one step back. That's not a, you know, that's not a bad thing. That's the cha-cha.
Yeah, my dad's cha-cha was a little bit more backward than forward.
Yeah.
But he had a dream. He had a vision. He had a goal. He wanted to build a business and leave a legacy. And I wished at the time, I was just simply one of his, I would call it paid help, but we weren't paid. We were just the workers on the crew just to make ends meet and bring home money to feed the family. And And the whole time I was obviously thinking to myself, man, I wish I could help, but I didn't have a clue how to make it better.
Yeah.
Just grind every day like he did.
Mm. Wow. I mean, it sounds like you're getting an education just by observing how your dad was doing business. Now, what number were you in the 12? Were oldest, youngest?
I was number two. I was number two. So I have one older brother and 10 younger siblings. And so, as you can imagine, with that many, we had some extra responsibilities. We cared for our kids a lot. We did all the work while the little ones were growing up and learned a lot, made some decisions early on what I was willing to put up with and what I decided I wanted to flee from. It certainly helped me kind of make some critical decisions along the way.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, that's tough with 11 siblings in one household, just trying to make ends meet. That's a lot of people. I think my house is loud with three kids sometimes. I can't imagine 12 of you in one house.
You'll appreciate this then, Michael. We had most of the time we lived in a place with three bedrooms. My mom and dad had one, and there was always a crib in there with the latest addition to the family in it. And then we had a girl's room and a boy's room. So I've got seven brothers. So we had all the boys were in one room. And frankly, we didn't have a bed. We just had a king size mattress on the floor. And it was just find a space somewhere on the mattress. And if you didn't, well, just curl up in the corner. That was kind of the way that things went.
Wow. That's unreal. You hear about stuff like that, but I don't know that I've ever met anyone that's grown up in an environment like that. And so put some of these pieces together for us. I mean, you're a young guy growing up in this environment. You see your dad struggle. You're in the midst of all these kids and really kind of on the edge of poverty, trying to figure out just how to make it work. Yeah. What was next for you after that?
Well, clearly college wasn't in the plan because we couldn't afford to do that. It was a rule around our house was if you quit high school or you graduated from high school, my mom would pack our bag and you'd be out of the house because you had to make room for somebody else.
Wow.
I got really lucky though, Michael. I had a friend who wanted to apply for an Army ROTC scholarship and he needed a ride to the recruiter's office. So I borrowed our family car and I took him there. But I wasn't going to apply because, frankly, I wasn't interested in the military at the time. It was just after the Kent State riots. But while I was waiting, sitting in the waiting room, waiting for my friend to take the test, the recruiter basically convinced me to apply. So I sat down, took the test. About 2 months later, some Army officer shows up at our high school and we have an assembly. And the next thing you know, he's awarding me a full ride, 4-year scholarship to any school I wanted to go to in the United States. The only kid in Northeast Ohio who had received the award or received the scholarship. So as you might imagine, I took the list of 288 schools, went home, got out a map, put a dot where each one of them was, and I picked the one that was furthest from where I lived, and I said, I'm going there.
Whoa. So you're in Cleveland, Ohio, and as you got that map out, where was that farthest dot?
Arizona State University.
My goodness.
In Tempe, Arizona. Wow. I had never been out of Ohio. We hadn't traveled, obviously, anywhere. I'd never been there. I didn't know anything about the school. All I said was, clearly, this is my opportunity. And so I said, I'm going to Arizona State, and that's how I got out of town. I didn't even have a car. I found somebody that had an old Mustang in the front yard for sale. And I asked him what I could do to earn his car. He said, tar my driveway and I'll do it. So I went to the store, bought 4 or 5 buckets of driveway sealant, spent a day tarring his driveway. And he gave me the keys to an old Mustang. And that's how I got to school.
What a story. And so there you are in Arizona with a just a slightly different climate, right, than Cleveland, Ohio. And so did you go right to school or did you go to the military first and then go to school?
No, I had a, you know, I went to, I did my 4 years in the, at school at ASU. And then I had a 4 year commitment in the military. So as soon as I got out, I was assigned to a military assignment, actually went overseas, went to Europe and spent the next 4 years in the military. So it was, you know, the next 8 years were planned for me, but it was a much better 8 years than what I would have had had I stayed living the life that I had while I was growing up in high school.
Yeah. What happened mentally? So you get into the university environment and then you get into the military environment too. Did you notice things were different just in the way that people acted and the way they thought? I mean, what began to change in you through those 8 years?
Michael, it changed a lot. Obviously, going to school there, that was it was a place where a lot of rich kids from Chicago would go to school there. I ended up in a fraternity, not because I wanted a party, it was because it was the only place available. And so I was around people who were there, who were affluent, and they lived life differently. And as soon as I realized there was a bigger world out there, there was another way to live. Honestly, at that point, every time I went home, I couldn't stay there. My brothers and sisters didn't understand why I was so angry at the way we lived and so frustrated with the fact that we lived in the squalor that we did and didn't take care of our stuff and didn't look for better ways to do life. And so I got sideways with some of my brothers and sisters because I've seen what life could be like.
Yeah. And you're done with the old way. Okay. So then after the military, you come back home. What was next for you at that point?
Well, I didn't know at the time, right? But I you know, I did well in the military, but the military is not a good place if you really are upwardly mobile or want to do better, right? It's kind of a move along with the crowd kind of a environment. And so I made the decision I was not going to extend my time in the military. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I started interviewing for jobs, ended up meeting a guy who was doing some recruiting for a small company called Texas Instruments.
Out
of Dallas. And the more I got to know him, the more I liked him. And he said, geez, would you be interested in doing recruiting? And I said, I'd love it.
Yeah.
So I actually took an assignment as a recruiter for TI coming to Dallas. That's what got me here. And I spent my next several years going out to college campuses all around the country, convincing folks from every area of the country to move to Texas and join this electronics firm that was going places.
Yeah. That sounds like an exciting journey to be all over the country traveling as a young man and figuring things out. And I can't forget this story that you told me one time just about, was it a girl in high school that you were dating and...
Not dating.
Okay. Just an acquaintance in high school. And you happened to run into her again or you're in her city. Can you tell us that story? I think this is so good.
Actually, there were twin girls that were in my class. Their father happened to own the projects that I lived in when I was going to high school. So we were the poor kids living in the projects. They were the rich girls whose dad owned the projects, and they made fun of us endlessly in high school. They were in my class. I felt like a second class citizen all the time I was there. So when I got out of college and got out of the military and got this great job with TI and I'm flying around the world, one of them happened to live in Boston. And I thought, all right, this is my opportunity. I called her up and said, hey, I'm coming to Boston. And how about if we grab dinner? I didn't like her, to be honest. but I rented a really nice car. I picked her up, you know, met her husband, picked her up. We went to a nice dinner. I took her to a very nice restaurant. And when the check came, I paid for it. And I'm sure at that point, one, I felt great. And I'm sure she was scratching her head. How did this kid from the projects do this?
Yeah.
But it was probably the most satisfying dinner I had in my life at the time.
Oh, man, I bet. I mean, the girl that used to poke fun at you for being poor as if it was your fault. And now you're driving around a fancy car, have a great job, picking up the tab at dinner. Yeah, she certainly was. Scratch.
I know it's kind of it's kind of lame to do something like that, but Michael, at the time, it was sweet, let's just say.
Yeah. I don't think it's lame at all. I mean, that's a way of celebrating how far you had come. You're no longer that kid that she was poking fun at in high school. You were a different person and you were moving beyond that. And that's one of those markers that you put in the ground and said, that's not me anymore. I think that's a great way to celebrate.
It was. Again, she's a good lady and I wish her all the best. But it was just a nice way to say, hey, I can do this too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. And then you went on to do really well in just the business world to the point where you're on an executive team and they're flying you all over the country in a private jet. The lifestyle, all of that was just happening for you. You're working really hard, but something changed at that point too, right? Talk about that.
It did. Michael, I had a good career with TI and I always wanted to run a business, but I didn't have an engineering degree, so that wasn't going to happen. I ended up being recruited to go join a privately held window company called Pella Corporation. Many people probably know of Pella.
Yeah.
And I had the chance to work with Pella for several years with the idea they'd let me run a business. They did. I had some huge success with running that business. Things were going really well. I was well into the journey, making more money than I could have ever imagined, flying on our company plane to go places. It was all good. I had two factories and I was always out either at the factories, at the corporate office, visiting suppliers, always traveling. I'd get home late at night or late on, towards the weekend. And I happened to get home, I think it was a Thursday evening, maybe even, but I got home before my kids went to bed and my youngest daughter at the time was 7 years old. And so I got home, went upstairs excitedly and basically said, hey, daddy's going to read you a book tonight. And she looked at me and said, I want mommy to read me a book. And I said, come on, I'm home. Let me read you a book. Let me do that. She said, no, I want mommy to read me a book. And I said, why? Why won't you let me read you the book? And she said, you're not my dad. You're my uncle.
Oh my gosh.
Michael, she had demoted me from her father to her uncle because I was never around.
Whoa. Talk about a wake-up call. My goodness.
Yes. It was like a stake in the heart.
Yeah, I bet.
I walked down that night, told my wife, we got to do something different. I'm not going to lose my kids. And so we did. I met with one of our biggest competitors. We had a long conversation about the competition in our business, and we made it a deal with them. They bought the division that I was running. I got a chance to retire. And at age 50, I traded in the corporate life to become the cookie dad for my daughter's brownie troop. Tougher job than what I was doing before I started. I wanted her to know she mattered to me more than my career.
Wow. I respect you for answering that call because it's a scary thing to walk away from, right? A very secure job where, you're continuing to grow and doing remarkably well. A lot of people would have turned a blind eye to that comment and said, well, I'll get back to that relationship later. Not you. You did something different. You took a step and said, no more. And you're right. It's not easy to spend more time with your kids. Try to have a relationship with a kid. It's very challenging, but worthwhile. And you saw that and you made that change. And man, I want business owners, executives to hear that because oftentimes that wake up call doesn't come or it comes too late and they already lost their kids. Yeah, it's never too late to develop a relationship, but you're setting yourself so far back if you don't do something about that as soon as you can. So I think that's such a great example of what it looks like to respond to a big time wake up call about what is most important in life. And so you're 50 years old, you're retired. What are you doing? Just hanging out with your daughter? What happened next?
Well, we did. We took a couple of years and frankly, just I became a dad again. And, you know, again, I'll just say, because you made the point, right? Many of us who are in business, and particularly if we're good at it and we're hard charging and we're type A personalities, right? We want the next big win. And I watched my dad live his life and miss every event that any of us as kids ever got involved in, right? At the time, I was a pretty good track runner. I could, you know, hold my own with the best of them. My dad never saw me race. He never knew how good I was. And in that moment, when I saw my, when I did that with my, you know, my daughter called me her uncle, I just envisioned what her stories would be of me and what her memories would be of me. And frankly, it was the reminder that, hey, you only get one shot at this.
Yeah.
And it can't be all one-sided. We've got to decide to, you know, you hear the proverbial balance. I'm not sure that there's balance. There are seasons.
Yeah.
But you can't let loose of the thing that matters most, right? The relationship with your wife, the relationship with your kids. And a lot of times we put those as second and third and fourth in the list. And frankly, we've got to come to grips with that.
Yeah.
So for a couple of years, that's what we did. I did that. I coached every sport that my son played. I was involved with my daughter every day of her growing up years. And then my wife and I basically said some prayers. I asked God where he wanted us to serve. And we took a long time to make that decision until one day my wife came to me and said, I know where we're supposed to be. And I said, okay, great. Tell me. And she said, I'm not supposed to tell you.
Thanks.
And I said, okay, well, yeah. And so for a couple months, she didn't. I kept praying every morning, you know, Lord, where do you want us to serve? What's the plan?
Yeah.
One day she came in and she said, it's Frisco, Texas. And I said, are you sure he didn't say Frisco, Colorado? I like that place and it's kind of in a cool spot.
Yeah.
She said, nope, Frisco, Texas. And so we packed up our family and moved ourselves from Minnesota, where we were living at the time, to Frisco, Texas.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Wait, I got to stop you there because I hear stories like this and I'm always wondering, was it a letter in the mail that she received? Was it a lightning bolt that came down? Was it, how was she so convinced and so clear on the fact that it was a very specific place in Texas like that?
Well, I'm a lucky guy like you. I have a wife who's probably more amazing than anybody else on the planet. You have one. I have one.
For sure.
She spends time in prayer every day. She probably does a lot more listening than I do. I spend time in prayer, but I obviously am not a very good listener on that regard.
Yeah.
And frankly, she has a good sense about things. But just to be clear, I will tell you that here's how it happened. I said, okay, fine, let's go check it out. I didn't know what Frisco was all about. So we put the kids with a neighbor. We got a airline ticket down for the weekend, got a rental car, drove into town. Clearly, the town had grown up since the last we'd been there. There were plenty of houses around. So we said, okay, we can find a house. How about a church? So we stopped for lunch, had a nice lunch, and asked somebody, hey, are there any churches around? And they said, Chuck Swindoll just built a place across the street. We said, well, we know who Chuck Swindoll is.
Yeah.
That's great. We'll go there. How about a school? Because this is a big place. What, any private schools? And the lady said, yeah, there's private school just down the road here. Just go follow this and go about 2 miles from here. After lunch, we went there, walked in and said, hey, we're coming from Minnesota looking to try to get our kids in, see if there's a spot. And the lady at the front desk, her name was Becky, said, we have a 2-year wait list.
Oh.
And then she said, what grades are your kids going into? And we said, well, one will be in fifth and one will be in third. She went on the computer, tapped for a minute, and she said, we have one opening in fifth and one opening in third. And we said, yeah, those are for us.
Yeah, I would say that's affirming. Oh, my gosh. Wow. What a story. And so you just decided, hey, we're moving to Frisco, Texas?
We did. And that's what we did. We moved down. I wasn't working. Yeah. We ended up joining a church, not Chuck's church. We found a small growing church, and I became free labor for them. I'd ride my motorcycle every day down to this new building they had just purchased. And I was just labor renovating this building to turn it into a church. And that's what I did for 6 months.
Wow. How was it not working, not hitting that next goal, not having that next accomplishment like you were in the business world? How was that during that season?
I knew that I wasn't done.
Yeah.
Right. I was still a young guy. I still had a lot of energy to do things. And so it was a little bit frustrating. I'd worried about whether I had stepped out too early. Easy enough, because when you're employed by somebody, it's a, you know, and you have the steady paycheck coming in, you can get complacent.
Sure.
And so I, you know, ended up deciding that I actually had somebody come to me and said, "Hey, I'm leaving town and I've got this coaching license. If you want to buy it from me, you might be good at that." And so I bought it from him to help him out of a financial jam. And I started doing business coaching. And Michael, what I found was I ran into guys that all reminded me of my dad. They were working their tail off, committed to make something happen, didn't know how to run a business, were good at their trade, and they just simply needed help to kind of think through the challenges of running a business. And that's how I got started in this. And I made a deal with everybody that I worked with was, and this was the deal I used for probably the next 3, 4, 5 years. I said, "You can't pay me until you're paying yourself," because many of them weren't making a paycheck. They were simply covering the bills, using savings to live, trying to get the business to work. And so the deal I made with them was, "I'll get you a paycheck first. And then once you have one, then you can start paying me for my service."
Wow. Sign me up for that deal, right? Any small business owner would jump on something like that. That's a great offering. And so you have this experience of knowing what it feels like to be them, and also knowing how to move past that and become successful in business. And here you are coaching small business owners. So I'm guessing there's been several iterations of that as you've grown and developed over the years. Yeah. What got you into this world of writing, of speaking, becoming a podcast host and working at higher and higher levels and within businesses? I mean, talk about that journey and what that looked like.
You know, I didn't know what I was doing at the time, Michael. It was, you know, and there were a lot of people that were trying to do this coaching thing who frankly hadn't experienced what it meant to run a business, or they'd only been in a corporate world, so they didn't really get it. So it was easy to stand apart from just the average coach that you'd find on the street.
Mm.
But about that time, my dad passed away. And, you know, my dad ended up washing windows on the day he died, believe it or not.
Wow.
So my dad worked up to the very end.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, how could I honor my dad and the legacy that he left?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I wrote that book that you held up, The Ultimate Business Tune-Up. That's the story of my father. And I wrote the story talking about the things that I learned from my dad. Some things he did really well, some things he didn't do well at all. And I kind of lay it out. And I use his examples to help people avoid some of the pitfalls that my dad went through. And very honestly, when I wrote the book, many of my brothers and sisters didn't like it because I told the truth about my dad and about the situation we were in. But I was doing it in a way to make a business owner see kind of a path forward. And once you have a book, then you can talk on the topics. Yeah. And you can start speaking. And then I realized that podcasting is really a good venue, a good way to be able to get your message out and broadcast it to a large audience.
Mm-hmm.
So I started doing a podcast. And frankly, my goal with all that, honestly, is nothing more than just helping those business owners who have laid it all on the line. And they said, "Look, this is what I've got to make this work for my family, for my future, and I want to leave a legacy for something that I'm good at." My whole mission in life is to help them realize that.
Yeah. And it shows, Rich, because this book is practical and it's helpful. And I've read through it and I'm a better business owner because of reading it. If you have a business, you would benefit from reading this book. Get it. I'll put a link in the show notes to grab this book. Thank you for being real about your story. I also love how you use a bicycle as a metaphor. It's such a powerful way to help you visualize how all those working pieces of your business come together and how they all are necessary, important parts. And it's just a helpful way to frame evaluating and looking at your business in a way that helps it be more healthy and more profitable. So appreciate all the work you put into that book, Rich.
Thank you, Michael. I mean, it's been a labor of love, honestly. The bike metaphor has been very instrumental in the business. I think it gives people a practical way to see how a business works rather than talking to them like you're coming out of a business school environment and talking technical. Mm-hmm. The reason I use it is that most average individuals who aren't business savvy can understand how a bike works. And if you can understand how a bike works, you can understand how a business works. So it just makes it very practical. And if I can, Michael, I'll just tell you, I had a big win last week. This is why I do what I do.
Yeah.
About 12 years ago, I started working with a husband and wife who wanted to start a plumbing company. And they did. We started just the two of them and they had one technician. And we worked long and hard. We worked for about 10 years together. They grew that team from the three of them up to about a team of 50 or 60. They had about 40 trucks on the road this past year. I had lunch with them last week and they were excited to tell me that they had sold their practice to a large company that was going to use their model that they had built to build 300 franchise units around the country based off of what we built with them.
Wow. How
and
cool
so
is
they
that?
They traded in ownership in their company for corporate jobs, corporate positions, executive level for this other company to help them stand up 300 franchise units around the country. To me, that is, I am so proud of them.
Yeah.
I am so happy for them. And it wasn't easy. It was a long road. It was, a dozen or more years of hard, serious work, but their work paid off in a big way. And I'm so proud of them.
Yeah, what an unbelievable win. And what a testament to your commitment long-term and your investment in them too. Because there's a lot of coaches that'll come in for a month or a couple months and try to get things turned around. And then they hit the road after they get their fee. But you're right, business is a journey. There's so many pieces and variables to it. And it includes the whole picture of life too. Like you have your family and your kids and your own personal desires, and it doesn't live in this silo of just being a business. So where are you today? What are you excited about in this season of life?
I'll tell you what I'm excited about. I'll set aside my grandchild and I won't tell you about that. Right. Cause then we've now, we've got our first grandson and he's wearing us out, but we're having the time of our life with that. But what I'm most interested in, Michael, is that along with you, I've met many, many good, solid, business-minded people along the way. We've built some great relationships through our masterminds and whatnot, and we've actually put a team of people together to help entrepreneurs, help fund entrepreneurs or people that have small businesses and help them walk alongside them and grow their business. And so we're very excited about the possibility of partnering up with people to help them with that journey, with voices coming from a wide range of experiences to come in and be a team of advisors that we all need to do life well. Yeah. So that's the season we're moving into. And I'm so excited about what lies ahead.
Yeah, that is such a gift to a young entrepreneur or someone who's just getting started. Because that's where it gets challenging is when you feel isolated and you don't have that full range of skills and talents because nobody has it all, right? And so you have to surround yourself with people who have been there with experts who have several different perspectives. So something like that is such a gift to a business owner and can save you from struggling for years and years trying to figure things out by having a team of seasoned veterans in the business world. I think that's really, really exciting. Rich, you're a mentor to me, and I've learned a lot from you in a relatively short period of time. And I just look forward to continuing to learn alongside you. Man, thanks for being a good friend and a solid mentor and an example of what it looks like to do well in life and in business. Where can people find you if they want to learn more about what you're doing, about your coaching, about your book? Where's a good place for them to look?
Sure. Thanks, Michael. And listen, you know how I feel about you and how I respect what you've done and how you manage your family relationships and your business and live out your modeling in an incredible way. I'm honored to be called a friend, honestly.
Thank you.
If somebody wants to find me, you know, my email is easy, rich@tourtoprofit.com. My website is Tour de Profit, like Tour de France, but just tourtoprofit.com. You can find it there. Or if you want to listen in on my podcast, it's called The Ultimate Business Tune-Up Podcast. Same title as the book. And each week we simply dial into one issue that most business owners are struggling with. And I try to give you some advice on how to implement something better in your business. So would love to have you join us. And if there's anything I can do to help, just don't hesitate to reach out and ask.
Take Rich up on that offer. He's the real deal. Rich, thank you so much for having this conversation today. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Michael.
If you live in that tension between how much time you're supposed to work and how much time you're supposed to spend with your family, man, this conversation is for you. I'll tell you what, it caused me to ask some questions about how much time I'm spending with my family and what my daily life looks like. So if you know you need to take a step in this area, if you know that your kids need you more or your wife or your husband need more time with you, take some action steps. Put a plan into place. Just don't say, hey, I want to do better in this area. Without a plan, it's not going to happen. Maybe it's once a month, I'm going to go out on a date with each one of my kids and my wife. It doesn't matter exactly how you lay this out. There is no perfect way. As long as you have some consistency so that life does not steal your opportunity, take Rich's advice. Don't wait for one of those moments when your son or daughter calls you uncle because they don't even know you. Start investing in those most important relationships now. Well, I appreciate you being with us again today on the Business of Living podcast. Have an amazing week and live with intention, live with purpose, live with vision, live with passion, and don't waste this time that you have. You have so much potential, so much to be grateful for, and there's so much to experience in this life. Go out and live it to the fullest. Have a great week.